Hello and welcome back to What the Phonics. I'm your host Kim, and today, episode 6, we are going to be talking about comprehension. That is the point. That is what we want our students, our children to be able to do, is comprehend what they're reading. So today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about 6 skills for reading comprehension. The first one is decoding, which needs phonological awareness, which you can find more about in episode 2. But just in case you missed it, I'll give you just a quick brief overview. Phonological awareness is the ability to hear those sounds in words and be able to replicate them. You can hear them, and it doesn't necessarily have to be done in writing. It should be done orally. Decoding, you need to know those sounds. They need to be aware of the sounds in order to decode, which is basically the phonics part. It's taking the sounds that we hear and tying them to the letters, knowing that the F sound could have a PH or can have an F, like in What the Phonics, because I thought I was witty. So that's one of the skills, is decoding. The next one is fluency, which is on episode 5. But that's the ability to read, as we usually tell our students, to read like we speak, making sure that it flows easily. We have the correct pauses, punctuation, things like that. Make sure we're expressing things to make it interesting for our readers. We have vocabulary is the next. So that's number 3 of the 6 skills for reading comprehension. Is vocabulary, which is episode 4. Those are the words that you have access to, whether written or orally. So if you want a little more information on that, please go back to episode 4. And then the 4th skill for reading comprehension is sentence construction and cohesion. That's just having our kids look at sentences and how they should be laid out. For example, back again, I feel like I tend to date myself in these podcasts, but way, way back in the day, we had the C-Spot Run books, and they were all very subject verb sentences. C-Spot, C-Spot Run, C-Jane Run, etc., etc. Those are not only boring to read, but they're not teaching our students to have a better blending and variety of sentence structure. So one way that we can help with that, the nice thing about it is now that we're getting to kind of a higher level and students can do the basic decoding and they can figure out their words and they can kind of start putting things together, is that reading is going to help writing and writing is going to help read. The more you read, the better writer you become. The more you write, the better reader you become, because you start to look for things that you were doing in your writing. So you're going to want to use some mentor sentences with your students or with your kids. I'm going to have an entire episode about mentor sentences and how we can use other people's writing to help make our writing better, or to help make our students or our children's writing better. But I'm going to give you the short version of it today. When you read a text, when you're reading to your children at bedtime, or when you're reading in class, when you're doing your read alouds, you want to ask your students or your kids questions like, what type of sentence is this? Now, of course, depending on the age of your children, it's going to change the vocabulary that you're using. We have our declarative sentences, which are making a, you know, they may say it's a telling sentence. It's saying something. Especially in the lower grades, kindergarten and 1, imperative is telling someone to do something. So declarative is saying it is sunny, where imperative is saying put the garbage away. Interrogative are going to be your question sentences, and exclamatory sentences are showing emotion and have that exclamation point at the end. So depending, as I said, depending on the grade level, you may change whether you're saying declarative, imperative, interrogative, and exclamatory, or you may say it's a question sentence. It's that emotional sentence, is telling someone to a telling sentence, those types of things. But you do want to introduce those terms early. You may not necessarily ask them to give you the definition of declarative, but they should at least hear those words, because the sooner we introduce them and they become part of their vocabulary, the better. But you can read, ask them what type of sentence it is, ask who is this sentence about, or what is the subject of this sentence, what are they doing, which is going to be, you know, your subject and predicate, or you may be just asking about a verb, again, depending on the grade level. But who is this sentence about? What are they doing? We want to look at the punctuation, not just at the end to help us to determine what type of sentence it is, but let's look at commas, how things are laid out, what is the punctuation doing throughout the sentence. And the cool thing about that is, as I said, writing makes better readers and vice versa. So now we can use that sentence as a model. Your students, your kids, they can write a sentence in similar fashion and have them practice writing a sentence that will look and sound very much like the model sentence that they read. And that's perfectly okay, because as students become more comfortable, they can ease away from that model, but they can still add that type of sentence, or add that they can have a little more originality and a little bit more kind of flavor in their writing. For example, if you have never cooked before, you need to follow a recipe. That's all a model is. A model sentence or a mentor text gives you a recipe for writing. So it gives you a place to start. And then as you feel more comfortable, you can go ahead and ease up and say, well, last time I feel like it needed a little more salt, or it could have been a little creamier, or a little bit more butter, or whatever it is that you need to add. You can do those things as you become more comfortable with your cooking, or you become more comfortable as a reader or a writer. You start to become aware of the different skills and the different types of ways that people read and write. So that was number 4 for comprehension. Being aware of and being able to replicate that sentence construction and cohesion. And then you have building background knowledge, which is similar to the vocabulary that I talked about in episode 4, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a specific word. When you're talking about background knowledge now, it's just a general idea of something. If something happened during the Great Depression, you want to make sure that your kids understand what that means when you say Great Depression, and how people were doing things like using money for toilet paper because the toilet paper cost more than the dollar bills were even worth. And for them to have kind of a visual picture of what was happening, so that when they're reading a text about that time, they can see it through those eyes. Some ways you can build background knowledge: reading, of course, but you could also do it through TV, movies, art, music, YouTube videos. The biggest thing is you want to give your child as many experiences as possible. And yes, in a perfect world, we would all go to museums and all these amazing things and see live music. And yes, please, by all means, if you can take your kids to those types of events, please do. But do not be discouraged, because like the things I just mentioned, we can get on the internet and we can still watch videos and we can still discuss things like that. But the most important part is to make sure we talk about those experiences, the shared experiences. But even when you go and do things, let your kids hear about it. Let them see that even as an adult, we're always gaining that background knowledge, because we're going to new places and now we have a new perspective on a situation or a scenario. Another way that you can build background knowledge, or even start to kind of test students' ability to read between the lines, because that's the point of background knowledge, is that context clues. we tell students or we tell our kids to use context to determine the meaning of words or even to determine, to infer what's happening in a situation. And that's, of course, a great skill. But if I don't have the background, if I don't have the context, then there is nothing to pull from in order for me to infer. So that practicing of inferring, not only do you need to have that background knowledge, but it is also a skill that we need to practice. One way that you can do this in a fun way is that Pixar has a lot of shorts that you can get on YouTube. They're usually only a few minutes long, hence the name shorts, 5 minutes or so. Most of them do not have any words. So it's a nice way for you to have the students watch something and strengthen those inference skills. And it works at a lot of different ages because they don't have to be able to read. They're just watching. And honestly, some of them are pretty hilarious. And I have played them for multiple grade levels all the way up to secondary when they were having issues with things like inferences. And they have been thoroughly enjoyed at all levels. I used to use it a lot to introduce those lessons. So find some Pixar shorts and you can work on inferences, but also just as much as you can get some shared experiences, even if it just has to be on TV, but make sure that you're talking about them so that that gives that background knowledge. And as I said in a previous episode, the brain is smart and a little bit lazy. So the more you give it that it can pull from, the easier it is to have that context to make those inferences. And then, so that was 5 and 6 for comprehension. One of the six big skills for reading comprehension is having a strong working memory and a good sense of self-monitoring, which I'm partnering those together because they do kind of work together. They're kind of a team. So the working memory is just what it says. It's being able to remember what it is you just read. And that works kind of in both directions because strong readers can see that an exclamation point is coming a little bit ahead. And it helps them to have that fluency and have that change in tone, even if it's just in their head. Because most of the time, or for me, when I'm reading, I even sometimes change the way that I'm reading it according to which character, or if it shifts from narrator to another character, or things like that. So that working memory is important because in order to have that strong comprehension, I need to hold on to the words that came before and continue to hold on to them as I'm reading the sentence or even the paragraph or even the page or even the chapter, because you need to know what happened before. That's the point, is, you know, when you have foreshadowing and things like that, if I don't remember what happened before, the foreshadowing obviously doesn't work. So making sure we have that working memory and also self-monitoring. So that is the ability to ask yourself or think to yourself, do I really understand what I just read? And that's a skill, it's a muscle that you definitely have to work on. Students often just read through it and they're like, well, I'm done. But we need to have them begin to think about, have I fully comprehended what I was reading? And if we work this muscle, we don't have to wait till we get to the end. Every few sentences or anytime I read something and it seems slightly confusing, I can just go ahead and reread it on my own without even asking myself that question, because I know that that didn't make any sense to me. I must have misread something, and I go back automatically. But it became automatic because I had to be taught to monitor and ask myself and reread if necessary. Some ways that you can help work on that are think alouds. So again, when you're reading out loud with your kids, think out loud, think about your thought process. And I know that some of these, the story that you were going to read, you may need to split it up. You may not be able to get through that whole story in one day, but the experience, the richness that they're going to get from the reading, because you are taking the time to think aloud, how do I process this? When I read this, what goes through my head? But instead of it going through my head, I'm going to say it out loud. I wonder if, you know, when a character says something, I wonder how he feels about this person. Or I wonder if him saying something about an umbrella is foreshadowing that it's going to rain. Things like that. Start to show your students and your kids that strong readers are constantly engaging with the text and processing it as if somebody said something to you. So think about when somebody says something to you in real life, how would you react? You should be reacting and thinking the same way when you are reading a text. And also, so on the flip side of think alouds, ask your kids to tell you about what they read. Let them read a paragraph and have them tell you. It can be out loud. It can be a quick little graphic organizer. I read, you know, we want to get past just the main idea of what happened. But what are some wonders? What are some things we think might happen? And, you know, make it okay to be wrong. Hey, what do you think will happen? I don't know. Well, I don't know either. But they did mention that it was very hot. Or they did mention this umbrella 4 or 5 times. I wonder if it might rain. And we could be wrong. And that's part of that think aloud and that self-monitoring, is that when we get to that part and it rains or it doesn't, we talk about that too. And I really thought it was going to rain. They mentioned that umbrella 4 times and I just knew that it was going to rain, but it didn't. But that's okay, because now we know more about the story. You don't have to be right, and let them know they don't have to be right in this process. It's about that monitoring. It's about that thinking about what I'm reading and how it could, you know, change in the future, or how it's impacting every part of that story. And it's impacting whether or not I even understand what's happening. And if not, I'm just going to go back and reread it without someone even having to tell me that. So comprehension is the goal. I'm going to get, again, some of these using mentor texts is going to be another episode. I'm also going to be talking about Scarborough's reading rope coming up. Some of those things that are in those ropes, in that rope, I have talked about already. But as we progress through this season, I'm going to dig in a little more to some of the things that I feel like I like to give you guys just a quick intro. And then I always try to put something on the website that you can download or that you can kind of look at, so that you have an idea and kind of something to start off with. So we're definitely going to continue to work on that, and I will be pushing through. Please, please, please let me know if you have anything that you really want to know about, or if you have any suggestions or something that I mentioned that you would like to know more details. Please, if you listen to and like these episodes, please go in and give me ratings. It helps the algorithm. It helps more people find me, which encourages me to continue to make the episodes. Because, you know, Mom, I love you, and my family, my friends, thank you so much for tuning in. But the more you rate it, the more we'll get out to other people. My mom hasn't had a child that was learning to read in her house for quite some time. So thanks for the support, but let's get it out to some more people who can use it. Please go to my website. You can send me messages in there. You can request for anything you'd like to see. You can download things. Thank you again for tuning in. And I will get you on the flip side, as they say. I never really understood that. But thank you again. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks for joining me on What the Phonics.